So today is Friday the 13th, 2013, and we're in Kathy and Lavelle Wilson's home just outside of Tok. I'm Leslie McCartney, and we have Barbara Solarius with us, and I want to thank you very much for letting us come and talk to you today.
No problem.
Okay, so let's just start off with, you were saying a little bit earlier how you came up to Northbury in the 1940s with your family. Maybe you can talk about where you were from and why your family moved here.
Yeah, I was actually born in Oregon. Started school there in Washington. And my dad had came up here, I'm not sure the exact year, 39 or 40, I think. And he trapped with a native partner, Oscar Albert, at a Northway for years. And then in 48, he came out to where we were living in Washington. And then shortly after that, we moved to Alaska. He brought us up the highway. There's four of us in the family. I got two brothers and a sister. And we settled at Northway, where he'd been trapping with Oscar Albert. And the first year, didn't go to school. My mom taught us at home. And then my dad moved us up on the highway there and built a, what was called then the Northway Motel on the highway. And it's no longer exists. But then when we graduated from grade school, of course, there was no high schools around. So the option was board with somebody in Fairbanks or Anchorage or something. And we ended up going to... which was primarily a native school, but it was operated by the Presbyterian Church, Sheldon Jackson Junior College in Sitka, which was a four-year high school and two-year college then. And we went there 4 years and graduated. And now it's all shut down there. They shortly after we left, they quit having the high school and just went to a college. And now that's all shut down. But it was a good, got a good education there. And then I went to the University of Alaska for a year, Catherine and I both. And then we went to Brigham Young University in Utah for almost 2 years. And then we ran out of money and started having kids. And never did finish college, but... And then I started working construction. I started out in the labor's union and then became an operator. And basically worked out of the operating engineers until I retired. I got elected to the legislature in 1972 in the House of Representatives and served a term there. And... after that, I started, I'd always flown. I had a guide license and used the airplane in connection with that. And so I became pretty familiar with all the area around the Shoshana and the Besna and Northway areas. And as a kid, we hunted all over. My dad was avid trapper and hunter. And so we used to hunt on the Besna Road, you know, for instance, in the early days in the 50s. And, of course, all the 40-mile area. So that's how I became real familiar with a lot of the people and a lot of the country. And eventually retired from all that, and now I'm just sitting around here taking it easy.
Did you want to show us on the map, perhaps, where you... Father
sure.
Had hunted and trapped, and
sure.
Perhaps because you were saying that you had trapped for quite some time too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I trapped. Well, when I was growing up, I trapped around Northway, and then even when I moved here, I trapped up the 40-mile area, and then up the Tok River and different places, and then.
Maybe the orange marker here.
So that's not the map we want, I don't think.
Nope.
I don't think we want this one. I think we want the and we don't want that one, so it's these two that we want.
Okay, and as you can see, some other people have marked on it where they used to traditionally hunt and trap, but I'll give you the orange marker, and then if you want to mark out...
So I folded this so we can stick it on top of the Nabesna map.
The Tanner Cross map on top of the Nabesna map.
Okay.
Because Northway's right here.
Yeah, well, let's see.
Did you start off where your dad used to?
My dad used to trap over here in the Black Hills, which is this area here. Mm-hmm. Him and Oscar Albert, and they used dog team, of course, then. And they had a trail that went from Northway clear over here. They had a cabin.
You could draw the trail around.
Huh?
You could draw the trail.
Yeah, I'm not sure where the trail was, though.
Oh, okay.
But they had a cabin there somewhere in one of these lakes. My dad showed me once from the air, but they used a dog team, and they trapped Martin in here and them everything in between. And then they trapped, my dad trapped up the Ladue, which is where we're at.
Here's the Dennison.
South Fork or Ladue. Ladue River, yeah. Yeah, him and Oscar trapped, I'm not sure where they went in, but I know they trapped up in the Ladue in this area. Mm-hmm. In fact, I got a picture of them up in there somewhere. But then I trapped, where's Taylor Highway?
Does that take off from Toke Junction?
Yeah. Okay. Cement Creek, Denison, Liberty. Well, I went in.
I thought the next map up.
Yeah. Anyway, I trapped up Liberty Creek.
Oh,
Dewey
Liberty.
Creek. Mm-hmm. I can't trap but clear up into here. Mm-hmm. Tom Payne. I actually went a little past Tom Payne, but I trapped up Tom Payne too, and down to the road for a few years. But primarily I trapped... I have a place up here in the Toke River. Okay. I don't show it. Used to show a cabin. There, right there. See that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, cabin. Okay.
That old cabin's collapsed. My place is right about there.
Hmm. Oops. I'll take that off.
But anyway, I trapped all the way up the Dry Toke, up here, up White Creek, one time clear up here. Then I have a trail that goes clear into Burnt Lake, which is
right there,
yeah. And then I trapped all the way to the road. Originally, from the trail here, I had a trail that goes in. Like that. I trapped that up until a few years ago and gave that up, but that's where I trapped the last 10, 15 years or so. But we used to go hunting up the, used to go up here caribou hunting a lot when I was younger, my dad. But I've flown all this area lots of times, flown hunters in all these lakes, and so I'm pretty familiar with the area.
So when you were caribou hunting, were you mostly caribou hunting on the west side of the Nabesna River? Did you also caribou hunt?
Mostly on along the road,
okay.
Road hunting, you know. when I was guiding, I used to use a lot of this area as my guide area. I used a float plane a lot, hunted on most of these lakes. But then I hunted on foot. I used to Pickerel Lake. And then I've hunted up in here for sheep.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly moose and all these different lakes. And I had a Fern Lake. And I had a mining claim in here, which I relinquished some years ago. It made the reserve people happy to get rid of it. But I kept them scared for a few years. I hunted all these lakes. Mostly moose, some bear, but...
And the sheep hunting, was that for guiding? Or
yeah,
that
was strictly guiding, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And sheep hunted all this area up here, all these...
Uh-huh.
My wife got a nice sheep up here one time, but I'm $100 all these drainages up here for sheep, bear, moose. Did a lot of moose hunting here in the Dry Toke. That's kind of gone down now. But I got 80 acres right here, and a couple houses and the airstrip, and we spend our summers up there. We were up there all last summer, and it's nice in the summer, although last spring wasn't nice, but... practically got flooded out.
Lots of snow and then lots of heat. Oh. Melted snow.
Snowed the 14th of May. I forget how many inches. Eight, ten inches.
Like, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. And then a week later, it warmed up in the 70s and a few days in the 80s. And naturally, we still had 3 foot of snow on the ground. Yeah. It was over... I had 50-gallon drum sitting in the driveway. You couldn't see them. They were upright, but the snow was over top. And, well, naturally, we had a massive flood, you know. Fortunately, I have some equipment there, and I managed to dike up things and keep it from... It washed out part of my runway, which I repaired, but kept it from washing the house away and whatnot. But hopefully, I won't ever go through it. I've had that place up there since... Well, I didn't get title to it till later on, but I built the first cabin there in the early 60s, 62 or 3, right in there. And
was it some kind of land disposal? Or?
Well, it was under the Homestead Act.
Under the Homestead Act, okay.
Before they closed it.
Uh-huh.
And
it was trade and manufacturing.
Yeah, we filed a trade and manufacturing. The last one filed in the state, which you file in 80 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then they come along, and when I finally got ready to get title, they said, well, they went up and surveyed at the BLM. And said, well, we're just going to give you 15 acres. That's all you can show you really using. I said, well, that's fine. Nobody around me anyway. What do I care? Well, to make a long story short, things drug out for a few years, Jimmy Carter signed the Land Claim Settlement Act.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's a clause in there to accept all claims pending. As filed when I filed on 80. So they called me up and said, well, we're going to give you 80 acres. I said, oh, that's fine. So end up getting 80 acres there, which has turned out really nice. We got two homes there, the original log home, and then I leased a chunk to some people for 10 years and bought the materials, they built the home, and then after 10 years it reverted to me. And then he got Alzheimer's real bad and had to move out a couple years ago. And so we have quite a few buildings there and equipment and to maintain the runway. And.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I used to maintain my trapping trails, but don't do that no more. But
do any of your children trap?
Life traps.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and he's got trap line up the Taylor somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and he was wanting to go up there last year. I don't know if he will this year or not.
40 Mile Air uses the runway.
Yeah. They use my runway for flying in sheep hunters primarily.
Right.
They fly them in. They can fly in like 3-4 hunters with a 206, and then ferry them out sheep hunters with the cub, so they don't have to go all the way back to Toke every time.
And as Catherine was saying, your son's a pilot, so he can take them in. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah.
Is that what you were saying, Catherine?
Yeah, our son is a pilot.
Right.
With 40 Mile Air, our son and son-in-law. 40 Mile Air.
Oh, okay.
And they utilize the runway in the hunting season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was wanting to do a little trapping up there late, and he didn't, though. And I don't know what he's planning. This year he's been tied up with a bunch of things, and so I don't know. But
well, that's kind of one of the things that we were asking people who've been here a long time is about the climate changing or the changes from, you know, springs and winters changing. And this was a perfect example this year of... Have you seen those kind of floods before and the temperature oscillation?
Worst one I've ever seen was last year, yeah.
Yeah.
As far as climate change, generally, I can't prove it, but I swear on a stack of Bibles, the winters are not near as severe as they used to be. When I first moved into Tok in the early 60s, I lived right close to the junction there, and I worked there for the Air Force on that site there, and maintained these towers up and down the road, you see. And I remember I had walked to work. It was only 3-4 blocks, and I didn't have a garage. And boy, I walked to work in the dark and the ice fog, 55 below, you know, 60 below. I mean, it'd go on for weeks, you know, 2-3 weeks a lot of times. Never warm up above 40 below, you know. But it's hard to imagine that now, but I know they were more severe. It's not as bad. This winter so far has been really mild, too. I mean, we've had maybe 1 week of kind of cold weather, but other than that. But the summers, I don't know, last year when we finally did get summer after that spring, we got 2 or 3 days in the 80s, you know, which is a little above normal, too, but not severe. I remember as a kid at Northway a lot of times, it'd be pretty hot in the summer. I remember walking down, of course, the road was all dirt then, you know, gravel, and it'd get real dusty. I mean, the dust would be covering the brush out there, you know, and I remember walking down the road, and as a kid, barefoot, walking on the edge, and that dust would be like milk
dust
running between your toes and feeling real good, you know. It'd be 80 above. Yeah.
You wouldn't believe you were in Alaska.
No. They don't have the dust no more.
I had a question about trapping. So you talked about how your dad and Oscar Albert were trapping with dog teams. Did you start out with dog teams, or have you always used snow machines?
No. First started out when I was younger, trapping on snowshoes. Mm-hmm. Just, I never used dogs. I went with my dad a few times with the dog team, but, you know, 3 dogs.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 10, 11, 12 mm-hmm. years old. But no, I used just snowshoes for years. And then I think I bought the first snow machine in Tok. Couldn't really afford it, so went half with another guy. And we liked it so much, bought him out.
Had to figure out how to make it your own.
Yeah. They were just a lot better than walking. You could, you know, it's kind of like this country before airplanes. An airplane come along, look what it did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or look what the snow machine did. Revolutionized trapping. I mean, and now you got four-wheelers, which, you know, I use four-wheeler at my place a lot, too. But, boy, I see a lot of places they did a lot of damage. There's too many people that use them that don't show any respect for the ground they cross, you know. They come to a big muddy spot, instead of going around it, they'll chew right through it, and they'd spin. They'd like big aggressive tires, and they like to throw big piles of mud up behind them, and they're just ruining it. There's going to be more and more areas restricted just because of that, because they just won't do, I don't know why. I get them up there all the time. Last summer, because of the high water all summer, hardly had any.
Mm-hmm.
but that's
so they come up.
Yeah, when the water gets low in the fall, they come up there, and those guys are good. They put them big aggressive tires on there, and they'll run right across the water at high speed.
Oh.
You know, and they'll pick a place where it's deep here, but it's shallow over here, and they'll roar across, and it'll stay right on top. Then they'll slow down when they get in the water. It's only like this, and then we'll come out on the other side. And sometimes I'm amazed how much they can do with them, but they do tear the country up. If you're not, you probably saw them 6x6 trucks sitting out here. That's what I use to go back and forth. Like last summer, I couldn't even use them until September. The water was just too high all summer. I mean, I could have probably made it, but because they'll take a lot of water, you know, they'll go through water like this, you know, without a problem, but. And then it was just her and I, and she don't have the muscle I'd like her to have, you know. So when it comes to winching one out or something, well, you know, so I usually end up, at least the first trip, getting somebody to go with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once we know we can make it and have a track to follow then and stuff. But last year we flew in and out all year until late in the season there. And then we're waiting all summer to get stuff in. We've been stockpiling all winter to go in, you know. But anyway, that's the normal way we do it, is with the 6x6 trucks. And I've been worried that they'll try to shut that down, but I stay on the river gravel, you know. I'm at, and it, Nick, after high water, you can't even find a track, you know. So I don't think it's. I've hunted a lot of the area though, in clear over through the pass and over into Chestachina.
How did your dad manage to come up here and partner up with Oscar Albert? That must be an interesting story.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. My dad wasn't much to what he did. I'm not even sure what year he came up. I think 39 or 40. He was drafted up here. He was up here, and I don't know how he ran into Oscar Albert. I know the road wasn't in, because I remember reading a deal that they'd, or Oscar had done an interview with the Fish and Wildlife, and he said he picked up my dad at Northway in 40, I think it was, or maybe 41, and I mean at Delta.
At Delta.
And brought him up to Northway on the river. And this road wasn't put through until 42, basically.
Do you know when the airstrip was built at Northway?
Yeah.
Could there have been a connection with the airstrip?
No. The airstrip was built, let's see. They started it right before the war broke out.
Okay.
And I did an article on the, it's in the Alaska Geographic.
Oh, okay.
On the Northway Airport.
Look that up.
Yeah, it's got some pictures and stuff that she put in there. But basically what they did, where are we at here?
So your finger's on Northway.
Okay, yeah.
It's right, it's right at the
Debesna Road.
Right.
Comes in here. Well, they brought their equipment down the river. And they cut over through here. You can still see part of the old trail.
Uh-huh.
It's this trail here. Mm-hmm. They came down to Northway, crossed the river, and built the runway. Bob Reeve flew the first plane in there. And he hired a bunch of natives from Tetlin, brought them over here. And then later on, Northway Indians, and they cut out the first little runway. And then they walked all that equipment in.
So was that from Reeves Field?
Yeah, from Reeves Field.
So they were basing it off of Reeves Field. Mm-hmm.
And let's see, Reeves Field.
More or less at the end of the road.
Reeves Field laid right here. I went down there a few times hunting with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on I flew this area, fly hunters in here.
Right.
Orange Hill. And there's not, last time I landed there, it's probably been at least 10 years ago, and there wasn't much left of the old runway.
Yeah,
I don't think there's much left. You had to kind of be careful where you went, because it's had washouts and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, they brought the equipment down. And just before the war broke out, the summer of 41 is when they started. I don't know when they actually got their equipment down here, but I had some pictures. It's in that Geographic.
Yeah, we'll look up the
article. Caterpillars crossing the river here to build the runway. And interesting, because the guys were pretty smart. The white guys, they were smart enough to hire an Indian, and he's sitting on the front of the dozer showing them where to go on the river, you know, so he could get across without swamping it. Because the natives grew up on the river, and they can read the river real good. They can tell where it's shallow and where it isn't. And a white person that's not used to it, I've traveled the river so much, I got where I could pretty much tell, but I get mixed up sometimes too. But I've been with the natives, even to this day, some of the older ones, on the river with a boat, they can tell right where to go and where not to go just by looking at the water. But
you said your dad was drafted up here.
He was up here for a while, and he came out with Oscar and trapping. And then he worked for, when the war broke out, He worked for old man Kessler there at Northway. He had a trading post
at the junction there?
Yeah. No, yeah, right at the junction, just past the bridge on the left. And that's where we spent our first winter there. Had, my dad had a little cabin there. But anyway, old Herman had set up, the Army gave him a sawmill. And the deal was he had to cut so many board feet of lumber for the military. And
looks like we have the article.
Oh yeah.
Alaska Geographic.
Yeah, there's.
And what was the date on that?
I'll get it down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, my dad then worked for him one summer, run that mill. I have all these. These are all photos that I submitted. But there's the Bob Reeve flying the first load in there. Yeah.
But your dad was drafted up with the Army?
Yeah, and they tried to draft him, and my dad said, no, I got four kids and a wife and whatnot, and we were outside in Lower 48, and my mom was on welfare. My dad hadn't been supporting her. In fact, he was he was living with a native lady there at Northway. And anyway, the Army started checking with my mom and found out he wasn't helping out very much, so they drafted him and then give her an allotment. And he was highly pissed about that for quite a while. But anyway, he did come out, and then he moved us up, and like I say, in the late 40s. But he never talked too much about... in fact, we didn't find out a lot of things until after he died. He pretty much kept his early history to himself. But I wish now I would have really pushed him, because I'm not even sure exactly. I remember he said he stowed away on a boat coming to Alaska out of Seattle, him and another guy, which I knew the other guy. He used to be around Delta, one of the Fails. But never really pinned him down to get exact... Yeah. But anyway, the Army drafted him, and he hated the Army, of course. And he said some shave-tailed lieutenant trying to show him how to walk on snowshoes. And yeah.
When we were talking earlier, you talked about what Tok was like when you first got here.
Yeah. When first moved into Tok, we had the pump station out here, run by the U.S. Army, and they had quite a few people there, and then there was a road commission here in town that maintained the highways, and then right at the junction there, the Alaska Communication System, ACS we called it, was run by the U.S. Army, and later... went to the Air Force, but that was basically it, other than the Tok Lodge, later on Parker House, and a few tourist type things, but that was it. There was no like today, there's quite a few stores, and there was one store there, had a post office, had a little store with it, and it wasn't much. So and basically, if you lived in Tok and worked, you worked for one of them outfits. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it was just summer employment. And like I say, I started working construction. There was a few people that did, but it was summer work. It wasn't until the pipeline came along that construction started working in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. You know, construction companies, they know it costs three times as much to do work in the winter as it does in the summer. So they didn't do it, but now they got a lot of stuff that makes it easier, so you do see construction in the winter, but not too much. You don't see any road construction in the winter to speak of, but there was, you know, you said 200 people in 70. Well, that must have been probably within a couple miles, because... our population now includes Tanacross, and I think it goes about a 10 or 15 mile radius, and it's around 1,500 people. I was chief of the fire department for a while, and we got our money based on the headcount, you know. And I think that when I was in there, it was 1,200. But that included Tanacross. It didn't include Northway or Tetlin or anything, but it was a pretty good area around Tok. If I remember right, 10 to 15 miles. But now that the pump station is all closed down, the ACS is all gone, all the military, population went down for a while, but then it's become kind of a retirement community, too. Quite a few retired people here because we don't have a city, we don't have a borough, we don't have a sales tax. So that gets us in trouble with legislators that represent Fairbanks and Anchorage that are paying through the nose, and they say, why aren't you guys paying? You know, you're not paying your fair share. But I'm on the State Boundary Commission. I don't know if you know what that is. It's they adjust boundaries for any municipalities, cities, boroughs. Local Boundary Commission is called. There's a 5-member board, 5 people from each judicial district. And I'm the only one from an unorganized borough. So I fight the battle pretty near every meeting. But I've got it pretty well nailed down to where when they say we're not paying our share, the only thing I can really have to agree with is we don't pay our share for education. But they figured that out, and if they charged each one out here, I think it was $460 the last time a year, we would pay our share. Because that's about what you pay in Fairbanks. But, I forget the guy that did that. Gary something. He was in the legislature. But, you know, we do without a lot of services, you know. Well, they say you get your road plowed. Well, we get the main highway plowed, basically. And where the school bus goes, the state plows it. But, you know, like I plow my own driveway. Most people do. And no, we can't. We don't have a land office to go to. We don't have a lot of things that you get in town. And the people in town, they forget what advantages they get from the state that we don't. You know, see, they're trying to build indoor tennis courts in Anchorage now. There's a big movement. And I forget how many million they want for that, you know. They want it from the state, of course, you know. Well, that's fine, I guess. I'm not much for... I think, you know, promoting tennis in Alaska is a losing battle. But anyway, they, you know, so I argue that. But eventually, I suppose we'll be... Hopefully, I'll be dead and gone. But
so how big was Northway when you first moved up there? As a,
The white population was very small. Mm-hmm. I remember when we moved there, was one other family, the James family, that we were white and were not employed either by the government. They had an ACS thing there, or the FAA at Northway had probably 30 people working there, white people, and a school teacher was white, and that was about it. The population of the village, I would say the native population was under 200. Not very big, not as big as Tanacross. Total, I'd say there's only 250 people lived in the whole area here at the most. And it was 90% native. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did your mom like living there?
My mom liked it. She, yeah. She liked it. She got along good with some of the native women. Ada Albert, who was one of her closest friends. And she took in several of the native kids. And when I was going to high school, she kept a couple of them around all the time. And they stayed with her and... with us, and still real good friends. But yeah, she liked it. She was pretty adaptable.
Remember your dad and mom had that store too.
Oh,
yeah. After my dad sold the motel, which was up here at the junction.
About when was that? Sorry.
Catherine, do you remember when they sold the motel at the junction?
They rented it out for several years. Your uncle ran it for several years.
Yeah.
And they sold it in 1956.
Two?
1956.
56, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, that was the year I graduated from high school. But anyway, before then, after he rented it out, moved over here just before the Northway here, right around where Moose Creek is. Somewhere.
There's Moose Creek.
Yeah, where Moose Creek crosses the road.
Okay.
We built a store and a house, and we lived there for years. And that's where I was living when I went to college at the university. Mm-hmm. And Catherine's folks built a place just right there, too. Later on, they built a place over on the highway mile 1260, mm-hmm. called Lakeview Inn.
And how did they come to be up here?
Well, her dad came up here in about 54. And spent the summer. He was a union carpenter. Mm-hmm. He got a job at Northway, wasn't it?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
For a while, and then in Tok. He worked on the Tok school. And then when he went back outside, then the next year he brought his whole family up, and she came up then in 55. And that's how they ended up there. And
so was any of family involved in mining at all?
Nope.
Any of the air? No.
Nope, no mining. Did a lot of flying for miners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the years in the 40 Mile and over on the Chestachina, different places.
Mm-hmm. You said you had a little stake at one place, but you didn't...
Yeah, I used to do a little panning and stuff there, but that was basically it. On the...
Was it this one?
Cheslina River. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or that spot?
Right near where it says cabins.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Just below the... There I had a claim, couple
right.
claims there. Yeah. And... But I never did nothing with it. Just usually fly in here with float plane, walk down there and pan and fiddle around and nothing serious. Mm-hmm. There had been some prospecting in there in the early days, but didn't amount to a whole lot. But there was I used to fly guys into, where was it? Maybe it was this one. One of these lakes up in here. And they would go in here sheep hunting, mm-hmm. walking. And same thing with Jimmy Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Brown was a mail carrier in the early days. He used to come over from Susloda and over. And this lake was named after him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to use this trail even. It was still cut out. You could walk over to Stone Creek and then we'd come up here sheep hunting. But... good pike fishing, too. Here in Pickerel Lake, both. Yeah.
You talked about changes in the weather. Any, over the years for trapping, changes in the animal population?
Oh, yeah.
Or movement? Can
oh, yeah.
Talk about that for a little.
Martin, particularly, has varied a lot. And lynx, of course, they go in them cycles up and down. And,
mm-hmm.
and they've been down quite a bit now.
And how's the Martin? How has Martin changed?
Mm-hmm. Well, like some years, maybe three, 4 years, there'll be a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'll be the years, I didn't trap last year, but talking to the trappers, there just was hardly any last year. And that's probably one reason you can get $140 for them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my dad talking about he could go, when he first started trapping, say he could go way the hell up to where they went, the Black Hills, And never see a marten track across here. Only in the Black Hills would he find marten. And then years later, there would be a fair amount of them. But this was always good lynx country, too. But lynx go up and down, you know, with the rabbits, basically. Right. And if you want to find lynx, go where there's rabbits. Otherwise, you're not going to find many of them. And the lynx been down... Oh, I remember when I was trapping around Northway, there was times there in the late 50s, mid-50s, that they were really thick. Lynx were. I mean, you'd get 100 a year, you know. Not no more. And the rabbits have been down for years and years. They come up a little, but nothing like they used to. They came up, it was in the 60s. I'm thinking the late 60s, or at least the mid-60s. There were so many rabbits, they were chewing the telephone poles down along the road. Well, it turns out a lot of them telephone poles have been cut along the coast and were in salt water. And they would chew down to where the pole would... Yeah, well, you can't see it now maybe because of snow, but you pay attention, you'll see poles that's got metal around the bottom. Well, the Army was here then, the ACS, and they went out and they put metal bands around all the ones that the rabbits were chewing on. And in the summer, they would be so thick on the road, you just... Between here and Dot Lake, you'd run over a dozen of them, you know. And I always get a kick out of her brother. He always liked to exaggerate, you know. One of his exaggerations was he's driving to Fairbanks and the dead rabbits on the road. He said they're going along with the road grader and wind rolling them up on the side. I say, you ain't going to make me believe that one, bud. But yeah, they've never gotten that thick again. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. They come up a little, but not a whole lot. So
changes in the moose and the caribou and bears, or
well, I don't notice much difference in the bears. But the moose have been up and down, but basically, I don't think there's been a whole lot of change. In the 40 mile, maybe. Because I read stories of some of the early guys. Old Fred Twilliger used to live just down the street. He's been dead for a long time. He was an early pioneer. He came up on the Stikine River and then moved up here later years. And he trapped around chicken and eagle and freighted. And he told me he could go from chicken to eagle and never see a moose track. That was in the late 20s, early 30s, and of course now there's lots of moose there. So in that respect, but now they're just up and down, I think mainly due to climate and predation. I know this area in what we call Mosquito Flats, Denison, Mosquito Flats, or this is a big calving area.
Oh, yes.
For moose. And we did surveys for years with Fish and Game. And one year we collared 32, I think it was, moose calves. And first we'd fly out and check on them like three times a week. Mm-hmm. And then later on twice, then later on once a week. And if we could, we'd take a helicopter and they'd land and go check the collar and see what, try to see what killed it. It was hard to tell. A lot of times there might be a bear on it, but it's pretty evident that wolves killed it, you know. And a couple of them drowned crossing the creek. You'd find them washed up in a log jam or whatever. But anyway, make a long story short, of the 32, the 1st of October, there was two of them left. And so the moose population went down. I think it's come back somewhat. But
then, of course, the wolf population depends on what there is to eat.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, of course they've been, you know, they've been hunting wolves in this area for a while, which has helped some. But a lot of areas where they take the wool, or the wolves mainly work, there's not too much hunting going on. But anymore, with the event of off-road vehicles and airplanes, pretty near everywhere gets hunted to some extent, you know, if there's anything there. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. hunters don't like to go somewhere and get dropped off and there's nothing there. So the word gets out pretty fast. But yeah, the caribou, of course, you know, most of our caribou are not normally here. They come and go. Mm-hmm. You know, we get the Nilchina herd that comes up, and a lot of times they'll cross in here. But they, a couple of years ago, a lot of them came right through here, my place, and down this creek and across. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Then they cross the road here and over here, and they cross and go. And some of them went clear and joined the 40-mile herd. Mm-hmm. You know, on the other hand, I shot a caribou over in Chisma Pass, which is up in here.
Up in there, okay.
I don't know, 10 years ago, I guess. More than that, huh?
What's that?
Was your caribou when I shot that caribou with the collar on it?
Oh, gee, I don't remember. But
yeah, it was quite a while back.
Quite a while, yeah.
And it had been collared up out of Eagle. It was one of the 40-mile uh-huh. herd caribou. So
they move around.
Yeah, they do. I didn't. They were kind of amazed when I brought that collar in because mm-hmm. the biologist here had collared it somewhere up on the 70-mile, I think it was. But anyway, so we don't really know too much about the caribou population except when they come through. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them. When they're not, they're not. Mm-hmm. But like when I was a kid around Northway, we very seldom got caribou. It didn't seem like, if we did, it would usually be around Midway Lake.
Mm-hmm. It's right here.
Yeah, around here. They seemed to cross in here. We'd see them here. And I remember my dad talking about getting them up in Ladue.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't many right around Northway. It was mostly moose hunting. Most of the natives hunted moose. And in the early days, of course, I know there wasn't any caribou because I read way too many stories of the natives from Northway and Tetlin going up in the 40-mile
mm-hmm.
on
defenses.
Yeah, Ketchum Stock in that area.
Ketchum Stock,
and they
yeah,
had
that
big,
was a popular place.
Yeah, they had big caribou fences built up there even. And, of course, they depended on caribou. I was surprised. It was their number one mm-hmm. animal as far as subsistence. But now I think moose is pretty much their number one. But now, of course, the native people have the ability to hunt about anywhere, just like anybody else can, you know. So.
Well, that was one thing we were trying to learn, was if people from Northway kind of tended to go, and Tanacross and Tetlin tended to go this way to hunt, as opposed to going down into what is now the park.
Yeah, I would say generally that's true. There's some of them hunt the river, mm-hmm. of course, the Shoshana, and the. Mm-hmm. But.
And that kind of leads me.
Not like they used to.
Right.
Because now they all got cars, mm-hmm. you know, and so they go on the road and then back off.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them use four wheelers. And of course, in the winter, they use snow machines. But. When I was guiding this area, I hardly ever ran into any native people hunting in there.
Mm-hmm.
There just was no access except the river. You know, none of them flew.
Mm-hmm.
I flew a few of them in over the years where they get moose, but.
So that leads me to the question of when the park was actually established. Did that affect how people could hunt and trap or use the land, or did it really not have much of an effect at all?
As far as the Northway people, I don't think it had any effect to speak of. As far as the white people that used this area, mm-hmm. It affected it. But I forget, one side of the road you could hunt and one you couldn't. I guess it's still that way, isn't it?
Well,
yeah, preserve folks, and park.
Right, folks who live in Tok, and Slana and that kind of thing, and more recently people who live in the villages, they can hunt on either side of the road. It doesn't matter whether it's park or preserve. It's people from outside the area that can only hunt in the preserve.
Yeah.
So the local communities can hunt in the park.
But generally, I'd say only people affected the most was sheep hunters,
mm-hmm.
you know, because a lot of this park is in prime sheep country. But used to fly a lot of sheep hunters in here, and Mesa.
And do they still allow that then?
You can fly into the preserve.
Into the preserve.
You can't fly into the park.
Right.
So that might be part of what you were thinking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Of course, the guides around this area got affected probably more than anybody. But
and has guiding gone up or gone down?
That's gone down.
Yes.
Yeah.
And is that for a lot of different reasons?
Well, the restrictions
mm-hmm.
among things and costs. You know, when I started guiding, I could take a moose hunter for $1,000, you know, and a sheep hunter maybe for $1,500. Now you're talking $12,000-$15,000, you know. Of course, they're given, if you go with a real quality guide, you know. I did mostly moose and sheep in the Toke River area, but the moose went way down in there once access got more liberalized, and then we made it into a drawing area for sheep.
The Toke management area.
Yeah, Toke management area, which they came down here and had several meetings. There's three of us around that guided in there, and we all supported it because we could see what was happening. It was getting over-harvested. And, of course, they, kind of like the Park Service, they pulled a sneaky on us, you know. They said, oh, we'll give you the guides 10%. We'll have 120 permits, and the guides will get up 10 of them. Well, then when they did it first year, nobody got nothing. What the hell? Well, then we went to them, and they said, well, what we mean is put in 120 people, we draw 120. Well, if 10 of them are going with guides, you'll get 10 of them. But if none of them are signed up to go with the guides, you don't get any. So I think over the years after that, I got two or three. That's about it. But, as we thought it would be like they did with the brown bear on the peninsula in Kodiak. Because traditionally, most of the bear hunting there had been guides. You know, residents don't hunt bears much. So when they made that rule down there, they automatically gave the guides so many permits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we thought that's the impression they give us we were getting. But I don't really hate the Park Service. Well, I do in a way. But.
So I wondered how you got into guiding. How did you get started with guiding?
Well, I don't know. I got up in the Toke River there and filed on that property. We kind of used it for, how did I get started really? I don't know, I was hunting up in there and had chances to take people and didn't have a guide license, so just went in and didn't have to be assistant guide back then.
Uh-huh.
You had to pass a written and oral test and sit before it wasn't the board then, it was people from Fish and Game,
mm-hmm.
State Fish and Game. They'd have a sheep expert and a moose expert, and they'd ask you questions and different things. And that's so two of us took it at the same time, and that's how I got into it. And just then I ended up getting that property there, and
mm-hmm.
one thing another. I never was much of a full-time guide, just strictly part-time.
Mm-hmm.
I did take a few bear hunts, but bear hunting in the spring is pretty tough. You get them late springs and you still got a lot of snow and ice mm-hmm. on the creeks, and the bears, when they first come out of hibernation, they travel a lot, and boy, but it was fun.
And was that before or after you'd been flying? You were flying, did you, were you flying?
I was flying a little bit before, but then I started flying a lot more afterwards, and then I went to work for 40 Mile Air in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
and flew for them up until basically retired, and did a lot of flying for them.
Mm-hmm.
Became chief pilot, and now I always liked aviation, flying. So I got, my mechanic's license, and then I got a flight instructor license, and then FAA made me a flight examiner where I could give you a check ride for your mm-hmm. private license. And so I did that for years. And but the regulations, the FAA has just got tougher and tougher and tougher over the years. And you know how old people are, or we don't adjust too well. finally said the heck with it. And then when I started having heart problems and had to have a stent put in, then mm-hmm. they really come down on me. And mm-hmm. So I retired.
For your driving license, though, when did you have to have it updated every now and then, or once you got it, you got it?
Once you got it, you got it. Mm-hmm. I forget now. We'd have guide meetings. That didn't come about till they started assigning you specific areas.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, and that went on for a few years, and then the courts finally threw that out, I guess. But I had a guide area in here mm-hmm. assigned by the board, and one up on the just off the Shinjek River
up north.
Arctic Wildlife Range.
And what was the purpose of that? So that too many people wouldn't be guiding in the same area?
Yeah, it was so it wouldn't get overhunted and you wouldn't get too many. Of course, there was a lot of fighting over the areas because if a bunch of guys had been there and you had to get rid of, say, mm-hmm. six of them, and you had to get rid of three, mm-hmm. and basically the ones that had been there the longest won out. But, and I had a guide here over here that joined up with Ellis's guide mm-hmm. area, which his area came right up here in Antler Creek.
Mm-hmm.
I know he used to say he'd shoot me if he saw me in Antler Creek. I was basically hunting over
Bill?
In here. Yeah, Bill. As he set his beer can down. Yeah, he was quite the character.
I never met Bill. I know the kids.
I don't know the boys real well, but my son knows the boys, and they get along good.
Uh-huh. Actually, one of them is working for us.
Is he? Which one? Kurt?
No. It's not Kirk. It's not Cole. It's Lynn. Lynn is working
Lynn,
for us.
Lynn, the oldest one.
Yeah, Lynn's working for us. And we're, you know, it's nice to
Lynn did a lot of flying.
Fly with somebody who grew up here.
Yeah. Yeah. And my dad used to, said that some of the natives, and him too, they used to come up into Stover Creek with uh-huh. a boat. In the early days, moose hunting. Yeah. I was up there once with my dad, probably in the early 50s. But the creek got pretty small when we was there.
Mm-hmm.
He said some years he'd go quite a ways up it. So
a lot of use of boats for access back then.
Yeah, and yeah, the steamers used to come up, you know, when the water was high.
Right.
This bend right here,
uh-huh.
it's called Steamboat Bend. And I remember it used to be part of a steamboat, the boiler, in the river. I remember my dad talking about it, and I found it once, and then I didn't see it for years. The guy that was canoeing up there from Tok, years later, told me he saw it, but I've never been able to see it since. It apparently is washed away. But that steamboat got hung up there and ended up there. And I heard later a lot of the back bar and a lot of stuff out of the saloon or bar, mm-hmm. whatever they called it, ended up clear up here at Shoshana or Orange Hill or somewhere. There in Nebesna, I mean. But mostly they didn't get up past Northway, but
mm-hmm.
and most of that was attempting to get up when the gold rush for Shoshana in 1912.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them come up this way and then walked over mm-hmm. through Cooper Pass. But so I guess a few of the steamboats made it up here a ways, but
uh-huh.
only shallow draft ones in the mm-hmm. high water. But yeah, it's amazing what a guy will do for gold.
Yeah, I've heard about people going over Cooper Pass, but I've also heard about people coming over on the winter trail.
Mm-hmm.
To get from Nebesden to Shoshana.
Well, there used to be a native village right down here, a small one, right in this area. I forget what they call it now.
I think that might have been Cooper Creek.
Probably it was called that, right in this area. In McKinnon's, you know McKinnon's book? He stayed there with them for a while. They had a village there and another one over here.
Cross Creek.
Yeah, Cross Creek. Maybe this or this cabin is somewhere in here. But they were real nomadic and just two or three families.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, I think all ended up at Northway or Tetlin. But they crossed this a lot. And then these guides that worked over here for years would bring the horses in and cross the river and come up through Cooper Pass to get over to Shoshana.
With the horses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then later on, they started bringing them up in Canada through Beaver Creek.
Mm-hmm.
They come over right here, come up through Baldoff Creek, up here and over. I guess it was better for horses. Yeah, Beaver. Yeah, they come through here. Yeah. There's still several guides working over here at Horsefield.
Mm-hmm.
I've made a lot of trips in right there.
And flying folks in.
Yeah. Flying hunters in for them guides.
Mm-hmm.
And then I used to hunt these lakes here too, and we used to, there's an old mining strip right in here. Used to fly a lot of hunters in there. There's another strip here at Big Bray.
Yeah, I've landed at Baldoff.
Have you? Baldoff? Yeah. Yeah, there's I used to drop sheep hunters in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of a cool spot. I don't know if the runway's still usable or it's been years since
I was there. Somebody from 40 Mile Air landed us there.
Oh, yeah, it must still be. Yeah.
And these hunters are from all over the world, aren't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
Majority are residents,
mm-hmm.
because especially sheep hunters, we get quite a few. 40 Mile gets quite a few non-resident caribou hunters, so they don't have to have a guide,
mm-hmm.
And some moose hunters, but very few non-resident sheep hunters, and ones that do are tied in with some guide, you know. But 40 Mile, my son and son-in-law, with the Super Cubs, you know, they kind of shy away from runways. These runways you can get a 206 in, yeah, you charter in, but they land all over, you know, up on the sides of the mountain with them cubs that scare me to look at the place. But, but they do it successfully. I think the management areas, from what I can tell, has really helped stabilize like the sheep. I know this area has got pretty overhunted, and it's not as great near, and nothing like it used to be.
That's down where?
This area around Shoshana, just outside the park and that.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be a lot of hunters up here. There was a guy guided in here too, but he's not there no more. And up in here, let's see, what the heck's the name of that? Bonanza Creek. Yeah, there's a little strip up here.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of that strip you flew into and walked back to Shoshana?
Chicken
Creek, yeah. Chicken Creek.
It's easier to say than ptarmigan.
Yeah.
Right.
And the guys to walk in there, this all got pretty much hunted out. Just too many people. And them guides from over here hunted in Klein Creek and Carl Creek. And them, of course, people going into Baldoff. And there was a guide worked this for years, Snag Creek. I think he still is. Yeah. But it's not like it used to be because too many people got access now, so they don't require... And the fly-ins got expensive, you know. Avgas went from 50 cents to $6, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's limited it. But overall, I'd say the game populations haven't changed a whole lot, other than the ones that vary, like I say, due to environmental or in some places over harvesting. You know. Some of the guys I know that trap, they like to trap an area, especially for marten, for a couple of years and then let it go. Mm-hmm. But then they've had trouble with, as soon as they let go, some other guy moves in, and then they got a feud going, and you know. Yeah, that's one thing Canada has that I always thought was a good idea that we don't, is they have registered trap lines. Yeah. And then you can regulate, if you're a conscientious trapper, you can regulate your area, you know, instead of just... This guy at Shoshana Overly, I don't know if you know him or not. I think he's... I've known Terry since he's a kid, but I think he's done a disservice to the area. He's overhunted it real bad. He took in a lot of hunters years back, just terrible amounts of hunters, and now he's paying for it. And of course, I don't know, he's got other problems among that, but
getting back to all the communities like Northland, Northway, do you know much about Tetlin and Tanacross? We were out there this week and people have been talking about the huge gardens that they always used to have. Do you remember any?
I know they used to have big gardens at Tanacross.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was mostly spurred on by the white ministers that came there, you know, and showed them how to do different things. Now Northway, I don't remember them having much for gardens. They had some, but not like Tanacross did.
Yeah, but remember, what's her name? Dolly's mother.
Yeah, Rose.
Rose. She had a tremendous garden, and so does Crystal's dad. He raises just about everything they eat up there.
And that's where?
In Northway. On the junk before you turn off down the road to go down to Northway. I don't know that they've had much in the village. Mom used to raise a real good garden, too, remember? There was good soil there up on the
I wonder if down where the village is, there's not a good spot to have a garden.
I think that's true. That's pretty swampy, you know, that whole area. Of course.
We had pictures, Liddell, of the gardens they had at Tanacross.
Yeah, I know. I've seen a lot of that.
Yeah. Big, nice gardens.
Huge.
Yeah.
Howard Fix. He's got big gardens. He lives right in this area.
He's up along the road.
He's a white man, you know, married to a native girl from north. And Rose, she's talking about, she's actually, she was from, I think, born and raised in McGrath. And she came to Northway. She was married to one of the FAA maintenance people. And they raised their family there, and we know a lot of them. And, in fact, her brother was married to one of the girls. And she was real industrious. She has had a big garden. And she ended up...
She moved up on the highway there.
Yeah, somewhere right in here. She had a place.
A plot of land up there.
Yeah.
And she used to fish, remember? She put a fish wheel in the river there, the bridge.
Yeah, down there in the river.
I was curious whether people ever were catching salmon, or were they catching, like, whitefish and other things?
Mostly whitefish, a few pike, a few ling cod.
She did catch
occasional salmon.
Yeah, not too often.
Wayward salmon, I would guess, you know. But we never had any salmon runs up here. Now, in Delta, they do. They get a salmon run there at the bridge, I know.
I've heard people going to look for them.
Yeah. We used to buy, they would catch them there. They were spawned out, half dead. But people used to go there and get them for dog feed. But then I read some reports that weren't even really very nutritious for dogs, you know. Get them by, but yeah, we don't. But yeah, Rose did catch a couple of salmon. But the natives almost always use nets. They had weirs. You know, them they'd put a net and dip net. And a lot of the area that they used to do that in, the river cut over the Shoshana River and flooded through here. Let's see, where are we at here? I'm lost again. Okay,
yeah,
here
we
are. Yeah. Fish Lake. Charlie Skin, this river cut over through here to Charlie Skin Village. They used to have several big weirs in here, and now that's all muddy water, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. I know it used to be really good duck hunting, and the river's kind of taken a lot of that out. So, but they use nets in Moose Creek, Fish Creek, of course, and some of the lakes. And them that, like I say, they had them weirs.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big weir built in Tetlin, too, for years.
Did they catch a lot of whitefish at fish camp?
Most, yeah, right in here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A whole lot of whitefish there.
Just, yeah, it's mostly whitefish,
mm-hmm.
but they get some suckers and
the other fish that are
occasionally a grayling or two. But and
did your family fish?
Oh, yeah, oh yeah. We mainly fish for pike.
Uh huh.
We like pike; it's good eating fish, and
ling cod.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ling cod's excellent.
Yeah, I keep, one of my friends, I keep trying to get him to get me a ling cod to try. I haven't tried one.
We used to fish in the Nabesna River, just by the bridge there.
Uh-huh. Oh, right.
I'm not, not Nabesna, Shoshana. I'm
mm-hmm.
For ling cod. Just, October,
mm-hmm.
1st November. Mainly just before the river would freeze solid and it build out a little bit, and we'd just use a halibut hook,
mm-hmm.
a piece of whitefish on it or something. Boy, we'd get ling cod, big ones, you know, 20-some pounders,
mm-hmm.
but you don't see much anymore today.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it takes them a long time to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to let them freeze, stack them up and chop them up and put them in at big kettles
mm-hmm.
got from the Army days. And with cornmeal, that mix up for the dogs. My dad had a dog team.
Uh-huh.
And we was feeding them, every time I think of that, feeding them ling cod to the dogs. Oh, didn't realize how good they were, you know.
How much longer are you going to be?
I don't know why.
Did you want to go to lunch?
Yeah, I suppose we should, huh?
We can sort of maybe talk a few more minutes and then wrap up.
Okay. Okay.
Pickerel Lake, is that because there's tons of pickerel in there?
It's here.
Pickerel, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got good pike fishing in it.
Mm-hmm.
Never caught any real big ones, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, 2 to 6, 8 pounds.
Right.
And
pickerel too, yeah? Or do you call it walleye here?
Pickerel Lake.
Pickerel was pike.
Jimmy Brown was full of smaller ones.
Yeah.
This lake's got lake trout in it.
Oh, Jotamans. Well, okay.
Lake trout.
Mm.
We built a cabin 40 mile did here with conjunction with the Fish and Wildlife, and used to fly trout fishermen in there,
mm-hmm.
lake trout fishermen. Sometimes it's good, sometimes not. But most of these other lakes, pike is about it. And like
uh-huh.
I say, whitefish run.
Mm-hmm. Well, just in closing, Lavelle, thank you for all your time. Any other just reflections on major changes you've seen in the entire area or communities over your life? We've talked about a few of them already, but...
Well, major changes, I think, is pretty much due to snow machines and four-wheelers,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, of course, more and more people,
mm-hmm.
you know, which...
More four-wheelers and snow machines. Used to be snow machines, and now there's mm-hmm. hardly any snow machines here.
I always say sometimes if I had been governor, I'd block the road at the border. Wouldn't let nobody else in, but, you know, I guess you can't stop it, but I think most older people feel that way.
Catherine was saying that there's fewer snow machines. It's mostly four-wheelers now in all seasons.
They become awful popular, yeah. Snow machines.
Mm-hmm. When they first came out, gosh, did we have a lot of snow machines around here, but you don't see that many more, but you see a whole lot
no.
of four-wheelers.
Mm. Snow machines now are mostly used for trapping.
Mm.
But, you know, still there's still a good population of people that use them for recreation, but more so in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go out on the weekend and recreate with them, where people here, they can drive out of their yard and go recreate with a four-wheeler, a snow machine, you know.
Right.
And
more utilitarian in some ways
yeah.
with the snow machines here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But especially when you're younger and you're tough and you can... go leaping over banks and stuff, and they don't bother you, but get a little older and sensible.
Well, I want to thank you. I know you're anxious to get going here, and so thank you so much for all your time, and it's been a pleasure.
Well, I don't know if I told you much you didn't already know.
No, everyone has a story, and it's all valuable. So thank you very much.